Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, constantly questioning the orders of my superior officer.
And joining us, we have a very special guest, flying in on the Defiant, Carmen Cartunuto.
Hey!
Now, we have a very special conundrum this week. I say that every week, yeah. Because they're all special.
What makes this so special?
They're all my children.
Okay.
And the children shall lead.
I think this episode's more of a middle child, but anyway. We're tackling ranking the first officers.
That's
this
right.
This is a bit of a spin-off episode, so to speak, with regards to tackling the captains. We ranked the captains last summer, I believe, with guest Vicky Sue. Mm-hmm. That was a fun episode, and it got us thinking, why not other officers? There's first officers, medical officers, engineers, security officers, Neelix, you know.
The entertainment officer ranking episode is going to be pretty sad.
Yeah. It'll be a good 5 minutes long, if that. But yeah, why not do it with our first officer? So, guys, look, this is going to be tricky because people are going to disagree with all of us. And I say we just have to go with our guts. We'll leave it open. If you want to rank it based on, you know, how skilled these officers are at their jobs, go for it. Or if you just want to base it on how much you like the character and think that they're interesting, go for it. Or if you're doing it for a mix of those two categories, just have at it. We don't want to, you know, make this like a real kind of a pain in the butt for everybody to figure out. This should just be what our gut tells us, really.
Right. I know, like, I rank them as to who I would like as my second in command, as okay. well as who I would like to serve under if my captain is incapacitated.
Okay. I think that's a very good way of ranking it. I'm personally going with a whole combination of different factors that might not make any sense, but I think most of the time it kind of comes down to who I kind of like and who I think is good at their job. Carmen, what are your thoughts here?
I'm going to go with the same system as Cam. Actually, I was thinking about that. Who I would want watching my back as a captain, and also who I'd want, like, you know, evaluating me as a lowly red shirt or gold shirt later on.
So I think people generally think about a couple core characters when we think of first officers. Why don't we keep some of these picks a surprise? Because there actually might be more first officers than people generally think about here. So this will be fun as we go through and give our picks. But Carmen, you're the guest. Why don't we start with you? Who's at the bottom of your list? Who is the worst first?
So before the podcast began, we talked about including the what did you call it?
The Kelvinverse.
Kelvinverse.
Yeah, it's what a lot of, I guess, people back in the day used to call the J.J. Abrams universe,
yes.
But now we're all calling it the Kelvinverse.
The Kelvinverse, okay. Yeah. Well, I don't want to be left behind in the dust of history, so I'm going to call it the Kelvinverse
Good.
As well.
Good man.
So I'm going to stick Kelvinverse Spock at the bottom.
Boom.
Are you out of your Vulcan mind? Are you making the logical choice, sending Kirk away? Probably, but the right one? Now back home, we got a saying. If you're going to ride in the Kentucky Derby, you don't leave your prized stallion in the stable.
A curious metaphor, Doctor, as a stallion must first be broken before it can reach its potential.
My God, man, you could at least act like it was a hard decision.
I intend to assist in the effort to reestablish communication with Starfleet. However, if crew morale is better served by my roaming the halls weeping, I will gladly defer to your medical expertise.
I think I might have even said it before on the podcast. I don't really like those movies.
Controversial.
I know.
Well, I don't know. He's just playing to the fan base right now.
Yeah. Do you feel that way about all three of the movies? Or
yeah.
Are they all on a similar low tier for you?
Into Darkness is definitely on the bottom tier.
Right.
Especially, I rewatched Wrath of Khan last night, and just, it's my favorite Star Trek movie of all time. And Into Darkness is just such a pale imitator. But I'd put them all sort of that one
right
at the very bottom.
All right, well, Kelvin versus Spock, it's an interesting thing because I was thinking about some of his best moments, and I
yes,
well, a lot of them come when he's right next to Prime Universe Spock. Those are a lot of my favorite interactions. I think Zach Quinto has some good chemistry with Chris Pine, which I think is, you know, key here. I wonder, I'll throw this out to you, Carmen. If he was your first officer, would you find it incredibly frustrating as, you know, the guy, your go-to guy.
Entirely. Like, for a Vulcan, he loses his stuff. Like you know, he loses it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, every movie, I think, he's...
Pretty much, yeah. No, yeah. I agree.
And Cam, what do you make of that whole volcano sequence in Into Darkness, where it's very clear that he's undermining Jim by the time they get back to Starfleet headquarters?
Well, that's the thing. Do you want that guy as your second in command? You know, you kind of want, you know, yes, to give you the opposing viewpoint when needed.
Yeah.
But do you want the guy that's just going to screw you over to your superiors?
Like, do you feel that Kelvin versus Spock has your back? I don't necessarily know if, yeah, at least at the beginning of Into Darkness, I don't know if that was the case.
He's just a, look, I'll just say it. He was my pick, too, for the bottom.
Okay, yeah.
And it's because of the fact, I don't feel like I've ever gotten a good example of this Spock either really being in command in a way where I felt like, yeah, that is a great leader. I feel like the Spock in the Kelvinverse has been put into a position where he's only there to prove to the audience that Kirk is the best captain. Yeah. Like, Kirk is the guy that needs to be, you know, running the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And because Kirk isn't even that strong in those movies, you got to make Spock that much weaker.
So, guys, which film do you think was the best depiction of Kelvinverse Spock? I mean, Carmen, you might not be a big fan of the Kelvinverse period, but where do you think, and it doesn't have to be necessarily your favorite of these films, but how do you think he was best depicted?
I'm gonna go with the 2009 movie. I want to say also, I think Zachary Quinto does like a really good job as acting. Like, I think he's a good Spock when he's being Spockly.
It's a difficult thing because you don't want to do like this exaggerated impression of Nimoy. And I think Chris Pine does a great thing as well with his performance of Kirk, where it's not that exaggerated, Shatner performance either. Yeah. So it's a tough balancing act. Cam, what about you? What do you think is the best Spock film out of the Kelvinverse?
Oh boy. I mean, I think I would say he seems the most consistent in the new one, in Star Trek Beyond, but he's also injured for half the movie. But sure. He doesn't feel like, 2009, I would agree with you to a degree, but then he's also, he's strangling Kirk on the bridge. He seems like just kind of a jerk a lot of the time.
He's young.
Exactly. And, we've seen in the original series, like Spock, say in the Galileo 7, is not a very good leader.
Right.
So we can accept that, yes, Spock at this point in time might not be the best leader, but he just seems, I don't know, he just does not seem very pleasant. Whereas at least Nimoy has a certain calm about him. Kelvin versus Spock just seems really angry and like kind of petulant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you sideswiped my question. So I'll just give you my answer, but I did like him most in Beyond. It could be because of the reason that you alluded to there, Cam, he's injured for, not even half the movie, like two thirds of it pretty much,
Right. But he is backing up the captain throughout.
Yes. And look, he's got good ideas. He has his radioactive jewelry that he's able to track down the crew members with, know? So, and at the beginning, when the ship was still there, it did seem as if he had Kirk's back a lot more than what we had witnessed in previous films. So I give it to Beyond in this particular case.
It's sad, though. Like, in Beyond, I almost feel like Uhura is a stronger ally to Kirk than Spock is.
Yeah. Or even Chakotay, or not Chakotay.
I don't know. Save that for when we get to the very best, Tyler.
Chekhov, right?
And
it makes sense because he is paired up with Kirk for a big chunk of that movie as well. Sure. So, guys, okay, why don't we go to my bottom pick? It's not, in fact, Kelvin versus Spock. I'm going with, maybe I just gave it away a second ago, but the one, the only Commander Chakotay here, the Maquis.
The charisma bomb.
Yeah.
The Delta Quadrant is a death trap.
What about the Temporal Prime Directive?
To hell with it.
With all due respect, it's a little presumptuous to think you have the right to change everyone's future.
From what I've seen, they'll thank me.
All you've seen are bits and pieces. You're not getting the whole picture.
Really? Just what am I missing?
It's not what, it's who.
I was thinking about some of his good moments as a first officer, and the one that really jumped out to me was Scorpion, part one, where he's talking about, that old folktale of the scorpion crossing the river, and how it's just in the scorpion's nature to sting the, I think it was a frog that was taking the scorpion across the river.
That's
in this case.
Right, yeah.
And it was kind of a way to represent his concerns over the Borg. A lot of other times we get Chakotay questioning the captain's orders, and it's kind of uncomfortable. But I think this is a good way to show conflict between the characters, but him also making a good point, giving her wise counsel, sage advice in this particular case. Cam, I'm curious, you know, Chakotay, what are your thoughts on this ball of charisma, as you put it?
Well, you know, Scorpion is the episode I think of when I think Chakotay at his very best.
Right.
I also think in the two-parter Equinox, he's pretty strong, too, when him and Janeway are kind of fighting over how to deal with...
Rudy Ransom.
Yeah, Rudy Ransom.
That has to be like one of the best names for a captain ever.
It is pretty great.
Yeah.
But moments of Chakotay greatness are few and far between. More often than not, he's kind of there. And I'll get to, you know, I'll talk more about Chakotay, my point of view, when we get to where I rank him. But I think the issue with Chakotay is they just never really figured out what to do with him. Like, if you look at a lot of the other ones on the list, they have angles to their characters
yes.
that, are, you know, we explore in depth that give them a lot more time to be dynamic personalities. Whereas Chakotay's more of a supporting character. He's just there to kind of be a background player a lot of the time. And so... he kind of does his job without a lot of flash and flare.
I mean, if he did not have that console, you know, right between his chair and Janeway's, what would he do every episode?
As much as Harry Kim does in a lot of them.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a troublesome scenario for a show. You've got... Voyager wasn't really depicted as having a skeleton crew.
Right.
Even though I think it should have, you know, and that's why they mixed the crews together after the Maquis Raider was destroyed, but... wouldn't it have been better if you gave Chakotay, say, the tactical console, have him actually have something to do, you know, as opposed to just say, it's off the port bow, Captain. And that's pretty much the extent of his first officer-ness. I would say, what, like 90% of the episodes?
Yeah.
Carmen, I don't recall, how far into Voyager are you right now? Because you're doing a massive rewatch.
I'm doing a massive rewatch, and it's actually slowed. I have
because you got to Voyager?
No, it's, you know, I'm very interested in politics, and the current state of what's going on south of the border has gotten me obsessed.
Oh,
to
right.
the point where I actually am now like not paying as much attention and have gone back to watching Star Trek. But I think there was like a 3-month period where I don't think I've watched a single episode.
I was curious where you're going with that, because they just dropped the writ in British Columbia the day that we're recording this. So we have a provincial election coming up. And I thought that Christy Clark and John Horgan were just taking away all your attention.
They're pirouetting in my brain. Where am I on Voyager? I think it was actually just after Scorpion.
Oh, okay. So you're further along than I would have guessed at this point. So
I think Chakotay, second last.
Second last.
He's second
so
last.
So we're doing 7 first officers. You'd rank him number 6 at this point. Okay.
And it's because he's got some good moments, but he's also kind of like a dial tone most of the time.
I mean, I do approve, though, of his decision to yell at crew members for making out in the turbo lift. I mean, that is unacceptable. We need decorum, people.
You know, and it's weird because you see Robert Beltran at conventions, and he's a great, charismatic dude.
Yeah.
Very
politically correct.
Well, let's not get into that. There's stories that cannot leave the convention floor, Cam. But I just wonder, like, why did the... writers never find something for him to do, because I think that actor totally could have carried it, and he had moments throughout the series. And Carmen, you said the right word, but like moments, like why can't they give him entire episodes that really would have sustained his character? Cam, I mean, some of his like big episodes, like showcase episodes, are like the fights,
tattoo, yeah,
you know, Flesh and Blood, your favorite return to Starfleet Academy.
Those are like 3 of the worst episodes in Voyager history.
But can you name any other Chakotay-specific episodes? There was... Is Unforgotten... I think Unforgotten... was that with Virginia Madsen?
Unforgettable?
Or Unforgettable.
With Virginia Madsen? I think that's his best episode.
I would say so.
Yeah, but it's not really about him being a commander.
No, not at all.
It doesn't really highlight his job skills. More just... It gives us more into...
His love skills.
His love skills.
Yeah.
Robert Beltran will tell you more about that at the con. But I think that's actually a pretty good episode. But yes, it's a character episode. It's not a, here's Chakotay being a badass on the job.
Yeah.
It is funny. It seems like Voyager waits until it has, you know, big spectacular two-parters before they're like, okay, let's really wow them with a Chakotay cool moment. And now let's never do any in a regular episode. They have to be special, exclusive.
Okay. Oh, well, you know what, Carmen, you revealed that he's number six on your list. I'll reveal my number six. We already discussed it, but Kelvin versus Spock. I kind of outlined my reasons why Kelvin versus Spock was towards the bottom of the barrel. I would rather have, you know, Kelvin versus Spock to serve under and serve over. Well, no, I mean, if I was captain.
Yeah, of course.
I could have articulated that far better. Yeah. But yeah, rather than Chakotay, who I just, he's just kind of there.
Right.
At least give me some personality. Which let's, even if he's strangling me on the bridge, hey, sure. That's personality.
Right. You know?
Cam, who is your number six, though?
My number six is Worf.
They're trying to disable our engines.
Let's go. We've got to get you to the medical bay.
What do we do, Commander?
We fight. Target their weapons. Fire phasers.
Interesting. Okay, yes. I was curious where Worf might rank for you guys. Cam, you tell me your reasoning for Worf.
Look, I think Worf is a great tactician. I love what he does in the Dominion War arc. I like watching him, you know, leading the Defiant into battle. I do not want to serve under Worf. My God, yeah, I think that would be horrible. I think Worf is a born security officer. Like, right. I love him in tactical or security doing those types of jobs. But him as, like, a leader, I don't really think he would be very good with people at all. And as a second in command, I don't know. I think he would be so stubborn that it would be very hard for him to kind of sometimes toe the company line or take part in diplomatic missions. You know, Michael Dorn, of course, was trying to really build up hype for a, you know, Captain Worf spinoff for a long time. I can't imagine a world where Worf is a captain, really. I could see another Klingon as a captain, more like a Martok type. But man, Worf has so many issues.
Well, yeah, I think, Kim, you and I, we discussed this in depth about how we don't necessarily think Worf would make a good captain.
Yeah.
I know you say he's a born security officer. I don't think he'd be that bad as an XO. Does Sisko really have any problems with him serving as executive officer on the Defiant? There's nothing that I recall. The
it
issues...
was war, Tyler.
Okay. But I think... but I think some of the issues that we did see with Worf was when he was actually in the captain's chair on the Defiant. There was that episode. Remember he fired on that Klingon bird of prey and he had to go through court-martial? you know, you're like, he shouldn't have done it. And yeah. That's what everybody said.
Yeah.
And there's other... But look, there are some highlights with Worf. And I'll say this, XO... could be the Defiant. It could be the Rotaran, because there was the arc where I think Martok was very happy with him as an executive officer aboard the Rotaran. And look, he dealt with the Klingon crew. I think Worf is not the most Klingon out of all. It's strange because we see these Klingon characters that are portrayed very differently than Worf. And we actually talked about it. Cam, I would never suspect that Let He Who's Without Sin be one of the most illuminating Worf episodes, but it discusses why Worf is so restrained and essentially comes to a horrific soccer accident that he perpetrated against an opposing player when he was 8 years old. And
yes.
He literally killed the kid. But that's why Worf has restraint, and I think it actually worked to his benefit on, say, a ship like the Rotaran.
Yes.
Would the crew love serving under him? Probably not, but I think they're damn certain that they're going to get their job done. They're like, let's not mess with this guy. Let's report to him, do our duty, make sure that Worf is happy or else we'll hear about it.
Right.
A concern I'd have with Worf is that on more than one occasion, he has just left like the ship he's on to go do something.
To kill a politician?
To go kill a politician. Yeah, to kill a politician of a rival like nation, empire, whatever you want to call it. So... yeah, like, I'd be afraid that he'd have to do an honor quest and, like, right in the middle of something.
Like, I feel like Worf is, like, the secret weapon of Starfleet, but you gotta keep him reined in.
Oh, yeah.
So who do you think was better at keeping him reined in, Picard or Sisko?
Because Picard, I would say.
But we do have that moment. Remember, I think it was Jadzia that revealed that Worf was intimidated by Sisko. I don't think Worf was intimidated by Picard. He greatly respected him.
Yeah.
But he wasn't intimidated by him the way that maybe Sisko was able to do that to Worf.
How much do you think that is the actual portrayal of the captains versus just the writing of Deep Space Nine? Giving Worf that sort of explaining why Worf follows Sisko so much better than he seemed to with Picard. Because there's no way Deep Space Nine was going to write Worf the way TNG did, where he's just like just flying off the handle all the time and, you know, fumbling around like a fool.
Yeah.
So is that just their way of explaining why Worf isn't like that on Deep Space Nine?
Because he's got like a very intimidating superior officer.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I think that Avery Brooks is a more intimidating individual than, say, Patrick Stewart. And I think and I think that comes across in the portrayal of the captains. Like, I would find Sisko to be a more intimidating captain than Picard, who I think is already pretty intimidating in and of himself, though. Like, where do you come down, Carmen?
I would be afraid of Sisko yelling at me, but I would be afraid of Picard being disappointed in me.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I think that might be also maybe Worf's concern too. I'm just projecting onto Worf.
I think Worf has probably heard enough, you know, Picard lectures, and Worf's just like, yeah, I'll just have to deal with this lecture. I'll just go back to my post. It's all good. You know?
I feel like Picard could do worse things to my career though. Sisko would like blow up, but I feel like Sisko's a little bit of a renegade himself, a little bit of an outsider.
Sure.
He's probably just gonna like let you stick around, whereas I feel like Picard would be more likely to like be like, I'm very disappointed, I'm writing you up for, you know, all these, you know, demerits on your record and all that sort of stuff.
You'll soon be starring in the sequel to Lower Decks, believe you me. Yeah. All right. Okay, guys, I'm curious. We'll get to my ranking of Worf a little later on and your ranking of Worf a little later on, too, Carmen. But, Carmen, who is your number five pick?
My number five is T'Pol.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
The High Command has asked me to prepare a report on this incident. With your permission.
By all means. I wonder if they'll believe that humans and Vulcans will be swapping chromosomes one day.
They're more likely to believe in time travel.
She just seemed like she was an overseer. Not an overseer,
Underseer?
Underseer. She seemed like she was just keeping tabs on Archer the whole time.
Oh, I would especially say for those first two seasons, absolutely.
Right.
And a lot of the conflict there is like, you know, Archer being kind of impatient and a little petulant towards it. But at the same time, like, I could see how it could be a little frustrating.
Yeah, you know, I won't keep everybody in suspense. T'Pol is my number five as well. So why don't we just dive in, deep dive with T'Pol here. But I think the problem is like, how much do you trust your first officer?
Right.
And for those, I think by the time you get to season four, I would even say that she's questioning the captain quite a bit. Still, there's a lot more trust between those two characters, but there's still that constant questioning of the captain saying, no, you're just being impetuous, typical human. Why would you think that? And that's tough if that's supposed to be your go-to person.
Yeah.
You know?
How much of that is bluster, though? Because T'Pol, I'm not going to say where she ranks on my list, but she earned serious points knowing that if I'm the captain, she may look after me one day when I have dementia.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a reference
to Twilight.
I keep getting Twilight and E squared or E, oh, okay, yeah. E2 mixed up.
No, but, yeah, it's Twilight.
Yeah.
I mean, T'Pol is in it for the long haul.
Yeah, that even rhymes.
And, you know, I look at the moments of tenderness between her and Archer. Like, she genuinely cares about Archer in a way that I feel like some of these other first officers who may be better at their jobs just aren't. Like, they don't have that sort of committed attitude.
Wait, you don't picture Riker caring for Picard in The Inner Light?
Well, I do, but that's in my, you know, fan fiction that I read. Yeah.
Would he be applying that straw hat that Picard was wearing at the end of The Inner Light?
You know, Inner Light or in All Good Things?
Oh, he's really big into the straw hats. Yeah. Old man Picard, I never realized that.
I would love to have the two of them in matching straw hats, like out there working on the winery.
Oh, Cam, you know what? Next Star Trek convention, we are cosplaying as the different elderly Picard versions that we've seen throughout the series. You know, there's so much to pick from there. But when it comes to T'Pol, okay, well, let's talk about this. Like, what about her arc as a first officer, where she goes from somebody who seems to be undermining this effort from, you know, the humans to search the galaxy, to the point where she actually wants to stick around. She wants to be part of Starfleet. She gets a commission, and somehow still ends up wearing a cat suit. I don't quite understand that.
Right.
But she clearly has an arc where she becomes loyal to the crew in a way that I really didn't expect, just based on those first two, at least that very first season.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I agree. I mean, T'Pol has a disadvantage, really, in our rankings in the sense that she is built as an antagonist to a certain level early on, in the sense that the Vulcans are a little meddlesome. They aren't the fan favorite Vulcans from the original series. They are often portrayed a little bit of a, you know, negative light. And T'Pol has to sort of represent that outside force, constantly questioning Archer through at least the first couple seasons. I think to me where I considered her strengths more was third, fourth season. She does question him a lot, but sometimes that's good. Like, I like that, you know, she does question Archer because Archer is not always the smartest. You know, he's, you know, when we talked about the captains, ranking the captains, I talked about how Archer ranked lower on my list because he's writing the book on how to be a starship captain. Mm-hmm. And I like that T'Pol is sort of the soundboard so that even his bad ideas get called into question. I think, you know, I would take some points away from T'Pol, though, for not taking over the ship in Bound. Okay. That's the one thing that I really feel quite strongly about.
Fair enough. Well, are you surprised? Okay, but did Archer actually follow much of the advice that T'Pol would bestow upon him, though? I really can't think of Archer going, "You're right, T'Pol. I don't know why I never saw it that way. I'm going to follow what you have to say." He just went down his own way.
Is that a reflection on her, though?
No, it's more of a reflection on Archer, I would say.
Because can you name a character that Archer did listen to their advice?
Not even Admiral Forrest, really. No.
Dynamic Admiral Forrest.
This is kind of maybe what bugs me, but like to a certain degree, like they're always saying, "Well, Archer, you're learning, but things work out in the end, even if you do really stupid stuff."
Right.
So I'm just like, okay.
I mean, he didn't even listen to Daniels, the time traveler, who's telling him, "Don't go on this mission." He's like, "Well, I have to. Shut up."
Yeah. What do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The future.
T'Pol, more on the bottom half of our lists, Carmen. But overall, how do you like her as a character, or at least her character development over four seasons?
I've only seen, I think the first, well, I've definitely seen the first season. Yeah. I might have, because I haven't seen it since it aired,
right?
Any episodes. So I might have cracked into some of the second season. So, you know, I kind of saw her at her most antagonistic, I guess.
But, right. Oh, for sure.
I think she's entirely capable. But I just think that tension between her and Archer, whether it's, you know, her fault or not, and I think a lot of it was Archer, is just like, it just was too much for me. Well, I pushed her on the...
Carmen, I predict that politics south of the border will calm down like any minute now.
Any minute
and
now.
You'll be able to dive back into this rewatch. Cam, you and I, we've discussed in depth, but we really like seasons 3 and 4 of Enterprise.
I
think the first two, I mean, I watched them back in the day and I ended up kind of giving up on this series. And when I went back and rewatched for the first time ever, the third and fourth seasons, I genuinely like those seasons. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they really start to get Star Trek, which I think is great. And I think T'Pol's character develops in a way, it's weird. Like I watch her in episodes from the first season and she, you definitely see that big character development that she has over those 4 years there.
Definitely.
So Cam, what is your number five, sir?
Chakotay.
Okay, I'm surprised that he was that high up on your list.
The reason that Chakotay ranked this high up on my list is because, believe me, I went into this thinking, "Oh, Chakotay's the worst by far." I really couldn't come up with many reasons that he deserved a worse. Like, I couldn't come up with too many strikes against him.
What did he do that was so bad?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You have to actually do things that are really stupid before I'm going to lower you, like, you know, Kelvin versus Spock does a lot of the time. Chakotay, I'm like, well, he strikes me as like the boss. I used to work in TV, and we had a director who came on to the show for a long time, and he took.
You were the star.
I was the star. Yes, yeah. Yes. It was a celebration of me, but we had a director come on.
Porn.
Oh wow. Yeah, no one watched it.
That's why you're doing Star Trek podcasts now.
It's come to this. But no, our first director was really strong. He was a very, like, great, if we're talking the captain, ranking the captains, he was top tier. You know, he's the Kirk or the Picard type of director. We had another guy come in who was so relaxed to the point of view of essentially the crew just ran the show. And he was just kind of there. You know, he was not a negative presence, but it was none of us really, really looked at him as a leader. It was just kind of like, no, he's there to kind of oversee us and we do the job.
What did you prefer as a
the original? Yeah, yeah. I like the stronger director who, because they drive you to be better.
How much could he bench?
But no, the original director was definitely he elevated us. Like he made us better at our jobs. Whereas, you know, the other guy, we did our work. We did, you know, decent enough shows, and then we went home. I kind of feel like that's what it's like when Chakotay's in command. You know, yeah. Harry Kim, Tom Paris, they're like, yep, steer the ship, run the ops, let's go home. You know? But I don't hate him for that.
Yeah, I think maybe that's almost more damning about his character is that he's just, and I mentioned it, but he's just essentially there.
Yes.
You know, and that's why I'm doing a bit of a mix of things, but like going with my gut, like, you know, how do I feel about this character? And I think the very fact that there wasn't all that much to say about Chakotay is very damning, though.
And you don't even get the sense of strong camaraderie with the rest of the crew and him the way you do, like, say, Riker.
Yeah.
You know, he's obviously, I think, intended to be similar to Riker in terms of his presence on the ship, but he's really not. And one thing that actually gave him a few points on some of the others for me was the respect he shows Janeway. Like, I do think he's maybe he's the type of second-in-command Janeway needs. Like, maybe she's better with someone like him who it can be a little more subservient versus someone like, you know, a T'Pol or Kelvin versus Spock, who's maybe a little more antagonistic.
Well, let's say none of the McKee made it over to the ship. Tuvok would have been the first officer. How do you think Tuvok would have fared as Janeway's second in command?
I think Tuvok would have been very similar. I think Tuvok just obviously has, he's much more logical and a little more rigid. But he would have also taken a real back seat to Janeway.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at least he would have had that tactical console and would have had something to do every episode.
That's true.
So
no one is making the argument throughout the seven seasons of Voyager like, Chakotay, when are you going to get your own command?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's
I've got the Delta Flyer now.
Is Chakotay, here's a question, is Chakotay a like career first officer?
Yes, I'd say so.
Oh, yeah, totally.
What did he do before he got it? You know, like he was in Starfleet and then he joined the Maquis, but I wonder what division he specialized in. Like,
it was a very quiet ship.
Yeah. Okay.
It was like a garbage scout.
Sure.
It was the one that like Spock fought on top of in Into Darkness.
When they encountered the Malon, he was just like, oh, I need to join that crew.
Boys, you're doing it wrong.
Okay. Carmen, what's your number four? I like how we can get some Malon talk in on this. Not enough Malon talk on this show.
My number four is Worf.
Okay, yeah.
For a lot of the reasons we mentioned. I'm a fan of Worf, even though sometimes he can seem like a wet blanket. And I would just be sitting there as a captain, like wondering when he's gonna pack his batleth and like go on some crusade somewhere. But I do think he's very honorable. The guy knows how to fight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
I would say this: if you are Worf's captain, you would. Okay, maybe sometimes you'd question his judgment, but you'd always feel as if this guy's loyal, that he had your back there. And I think that's something in his favor. He was my number four as well. Cam, he was your number six?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think we went into depth on Worf, though. So if you guys disagree with us, I just don't think Worf would ever be meant to be a captain. And it's interesting to see, this is clearly a character who I think over the course of, what, like 11 seasons, you can tell that he learned a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he still has a lot more learning to do.
Well, how do you guys feel Worf would be in a second-in-command position in a situation where it's not war? Like, kind of one of those boring diplomatic missions that Picard, I'm sure, excelled at.
He would get to do the, go on the landing parties.
Sure.
You know, he would lead the away teams, much like Riker did. And we saw Worf on a lot of, he had a lot of experience. He was on all those away missions, so
I would love to see Worf in Angel One.
Can't argue with that. Yeah. But okay, the interesting thing here, though, is we keep saying, like, yeah, we don't know if Worf is meant to be a captain. I do like how Deep Space Nine acknowledged that as well. And at the very end, they're like, you're going to be a diplomat. And I think that's a great way to, you know, fill out that arc. Completely undermined by Star Trek Nemesis when we find out that he goes back to Starfleet.
Yeah.
And they don't really explain why. Maybe it was a cut scene. I think it was in the script or something.
I watched that a couple months ago. Why didn't he?
They never said anything in the final version of the film. I recall they were talking about the script, like, this is like 15, 16 years ago. And I think he had like one line that said, "Diplomacy was not for me."
Oh, good. Oh.
And I was just like, that really bugged me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that they cut it out. But then all of a sudden you just have Worf back in his red uniform hanging out with this crew. He's there for the wedding, but they don't really explain anything beyond that. It's like suddenly he's back at the tactical console again. Sorry, whoever was the tactical officer aboard the Enterprise-E obviously wasn't sticking around in any of those meetings with the senior officers that Worf was privy to during Nemesis.
I feel like for most fans, Worf's unexplained appearance there is one of the less annoying criticisms to be thrown at that movie.
I cannot disagree with you there. Carmen, why don't we go to you? Are we on number three already?
I think we're on number three.
Okay, so we're...
I thought we were on number four.
What was your number four?
Oh, my number four is T'Pol.
Okay.
And I would have even considered ranking T'Pol higher. But for me, the problem with T'Pol is, one, yes, the fact that she's portrayed very antagonistic early on, intentionally so. Mm-hmm. But that also takes her down in terms of ranking the job. Second of all, and I blame the writers for this, is that there was an awful lot of episodes written about T'Pol, like, breaking down emotionally.
Yes.
Mm. And they often would use her, like, as sort of this prop to, you know, let's cause chaos on the bridge, and it's going to be T'Pol, you know, and...
It's just very unfortunate that you have a woman first officer, and yes, so many of her episodes focused on her being emotionally unstable.
Just yes.
Like, oh, that's a wonderful stereotype that's all the men in the 1950s would have totally perpetuated.
And it also really bugs me. She has the relationship with Trip, right? And
were you jealous? Is that why it bugged you?
I did a Georgia accent for weeks after that.
You're like, I need Nero pressure too.
No, it was the fact that, like, she has this relationship with Trip, which is fine, but a lot of the emotions of that relationship find their way into the job, whereas that never happens with Riker on Next Gen with his, you know, relationship with Troy, or there's the brief one, of course, with Ro. This does not impact the job the way that Enterprise likes to focus on that. And I don't blame the character of T'Pol. I blame the writing staff for that one.
In Star Trek, they make Vulcans, like, freak out a little too much for my taste. It should be something special, like something you have like very infrequently that, like, for some reason, whether it's Ponfar or something else, like a Vulcan goes off the rails. But it just seems like a writer will just be like, and I don't know, let's just have this Vulcan go crazy.
Cam and I were doing research for an episode that will be airing a little later, but there's a lot of Vulcan freaking outs that we witnessed recently.
Yes.
So
yeah.
In one of the Voyager episodes, there was the one where Vulcan engineer, what's his name?
Vorek.
Yeah. He assaults B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like...
the writer's like, hey, it's just Ponfar, dude.
Yeah,
and it's just like, Ponfar. Oh, okay.
It's like, you go to the original series, you know, like, say, This Side of Paradise, where Spock freaks out. What does he do? He hangs from a tree and he's smiling a lot.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much more fun in the original series when they freak out versus, like, Enterprise, where they're, like, genuinely homicidal and scary.
Or, no, he's down on the planet with Pike and he's smiling at flowers, you know?
Or in, famously, A Mock Time, where he has Ponfar. He's, like, throwing a bowl of soup across the hallway, whereas, like, T'Pol gets Ponfar and she's, like, going to kill people.
I do appreciate that they kind of addressed the whole issue with the Vulcans in season 4 of Enterprise and why the Vulcans are so different in this period of time versus the ones that we know them historically for.
Right, of course.
Okay, well, look, I'll take off my nose-numbing agent that I used, you know, aboard the Enterprise, and I'm going to throw it over to you. We're in the top three. Who gets a bronze medal when it comes to first officers, Carmen?
Kira Nerys.
The Defiance away.
Contact the Dominion fleet. Tell them Bajoran government welcomes them to Deep Space Nine.
Message acknowledged.
Good. It's the last message the station will be sending out for a while. Computer, initiate program Cisco 197. Program initiated.
I think she is a natural-born leader. having been like a leader of one of the terrorist cells.
Right.
I think she will. She's very stubborn, actually. So that's a strike against her. But I think she has a great rapport with everyone on Deep Space Nine. People respect her, obviously. I really like her.
Yeah, and well, let me ask you this, though. I mean, if this was just based on season one, Kira, she'd be more towards the bottom of my list, you know, where it's very, I think Sisko was just like, okay.
Yeah,
she kind of gets the T'Pol treatment early on.
Yeah, but I think by the end of it, you know, Sisko and Kira are so close.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen, you nailed it. Like, she's very tight with the rest of the crew there. You know, she's got, like, very strong relationships with Jadzia Dax. We didn't see so much with her and Ezri.
No.
But, and there's certainly, I wish we saw more of her and Worf as well, but you can tell that there's some mutual respect between the two. Her and Odo, of course, you know, and so it's, I think everybody has complete confidence with Kira. Yeah, I'd say maybe starting season three for sure. I think that's when she's kind of solidified, like that she is a solid first officer who's pretty badass to boot.
And I love that her relationship with the crew is tight, but it's not a copycat of the Riker.
Yeah.
You know, like Riker's more he's just kind of goofy and jokes around with them. Whereas like Kira is someone who's much more of like an affectionate and like emotionally attached relationship with the crew than I think Riker has.
Yeah.
I feel like Riker's just fun wherever you take him. Whereas like Kira bonds with these people in a very serious way.
She's O'Brien's surrogate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that.
Now that's a first officer.
Yeah, Riker would never do that.
It's not a tumor.
Wow.
Trip might have, though, if he'd been a second in command.
That's true. Oh, man. Even think about the relationship she has with Bashir. You know, that's something where, look at how much she hated that guy's guts, at the first couple seasons. And then by the end, you know, they are close. And it feels like a very... I totally believe you, Cam, when you say that, like, put Riker in any situation, he's going to get along with people. But I think with Kira, these feel like well-earned relationships that she has with the crew.
And, like, really, really deep ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And guys, let me ask you this, though. Is there a more badass first officer among all the ones that we've discussed up until this point, though?
Chakotay?
Well, yeah, no. Based on the fight with him getting training from Boothby.
Yeah, yeah. No, to me, Kira is the ultimate badass. She was actually my number three as well, I'll just say. What I really love about Kira is that she's tough. Like, you know, in many ways, you know, Sisko, we've talked about how Worf was intimidated by Sisko and how Sisko is probably the toughest of the captains. I think we talked about that point in our ranking the captains, that he's the one who you'd want to mess with the least.
Yeah.
Kira might be the first officer I'd want to mess with the least because she's capable of pretty heinous things.
Yeah, she's killed, man.
Yeah.
She will do again.
Well, the other thing is she was a child soldier.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if they ever really addressed the fact that I don't think she ever went to therapy or anything like that. So she's got a lot of baggage, you know. I would not want to be messing with her. You know, if she gives me a command, I'm like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
You know?
And I love that I feel that if Sisko leaves Deep Space Nine, Kira can run it just fine.
Okay, by the end of the series, we totally get that with Colonel Kira in charge. And what a great moment. You know, the baseball is still there on the desk, but it doesn't feel as if, like... Sisko's presence in the Celestial Temple is undermining her command at all. And well, one of my other favorite moments is when Dukat returns to the station and Call to Arms, and Kira's there waiting for him. And so what do you think of the Kira relationship as Dukat's first officer when Tarek Nor comes back into play here? How do you think Dukat felt about her as the second in command aboard the station?
He's wishing he had a Chakotay.
Somebody who would just be there.
Yeah.
Not, you know, interfering with anything.
Yeah, and Dukat's also, like, he's also so full of himself and so sure of himself that I don't think he was, I don't know, I don't think he was overly worried about it. It's been a while now that I think about it. I'm trying to remember these episodes, but...
He gives her a dress. Yeah, is that something Picard would ever do for Riker?
He's also a creep.
Only in my fan fiction.
Yeah. I would say that Yeah, Dukat, as much as he was attracted to her, I don't think, and rightfully so, I don't think he ever felt as if she had his back or anything like that.
No.
Like, this is somebody that he can trust.
Yeah. I don't think he trusted a lot of people, though.
Although she had that relationship with Zial, and I think that was important to Dukat as well. And I think he viewed that Tora Zial relationship with Kira as his way to get into Kira's good graces.
Right.
Not necessarily from a command perspective, more for that personal perspective. Dukat is such a creep, is he not?
He's pretty, pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because he had the relationship with Kira's mother as well, and you can see why he's interested in... I don't know. It's making me vomit just a little thinking about it now.
Look forward to that episode further down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think he just really desperately wants people to view him in an amazing light and, like, as a hero.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, guys, this might be a bit of a controversial pick for my number three, but I'm going with Prime Spock.
Progress report.
I'm connecting the bypass circuit now, sir. It should take another half hour.
Speed is essential, Lieutenant.
Mr. Spock, I haven't done anything like this in years. If it isn't done just right, I could blow the entire communication system. It's very delicate work, sir.
I can think of no one better equipped to handle it, Miss Uhura. Please proceed.
Yes, sir. Right away.
I know, but here's the thing. You guys, when we're talking about Kelvin versus Spock, you kind of outlined some of the other issues that we have with the Prime Universe Spock. Watch Galileo 7. He's not really a leader.
Right.
You watch much of Star Trek, the original series, and you definitely get the sense he's on the verge of undermining the captain constantly. Like, he has the captain's back. He's giving the opposing viewpoint as well, but... Kirk must get frustrated more than once. I think Spock is incredibly competent at his job, but is he somebody that... Oh, Cam, you brought it up. Is Spock somebody that you want to serve under? You have complete confidence that he is good at his job, but would you want to report to him?
The thing is, though, there's an evolution to Spock because, yeah, Galileo 7, no, I don't want to serve under Spock. But when I'm looking at later episodes like...
Spock's brain?
Obviously. No, but I'm thinking of, like, Doomsday Machine, but also in Gamesters of Triskelion, when Kirk is captured, you know, and fighting in the arena. There is a sequence where Spock is searching for the captain, and Scotty and Bones don't agree with what he's doing. And I love this moment where Spock just takes them aside and goes, gentlemen, like, do we want to stage a rebellion here or, you know, mutiny? And it's like they realize, like, oh, no, you know, and they kind of calm down and come up with, like, a compromise. And I love the way he deals with that. It's not like him calling them on the carpet. And it's just, like, I think a perfect diplomatic way to deal with sort of this potential fiery situation with Bones. And to me, that's the Spock I like later on. Or there's this the episode, I can't remember the episode, where Uhura's repairing equipment. And she kind of gets annoyed because she thinks he's questioning her. And he's like, no, you're the best at what you do. I need you on this. You know, and he's logical, but he seems to me to be actually a pretty strong leader.
Do you think if you get a compliment from Spock, that means more to you than pretty much any other crew member?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because, you know, most of your reporting to Spock, he'll just be like, thank you, you know, be on your way.
Yeah.
Kind of attitude. And if he compliments you, that's like... extra points.
Yeah.
And what do we make of the difference between, say, original series Spock versus movie Spock, which definitely skews the rankings to a certain degree, because obviously with Riker, we get 7 years of his career plus a couple movies. And the movies, he plays a pretty small role versus Spock, who is thoroughly explored over, what, like, how many decades of his life?
Well, yeah, like, what, 25?
Something like that. Yeah.
So, yeah, but in all fairness, in the movies, I think he was he ranked as a captain for everything except for the motion picture, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So, at that point, and he wasn't even first officer in the motion picture, still no, Will Decker.
But he kind of plays the role.
To a certain degree. But
Why are we not ranking Decker? Oh, he is. I'm saving that for number one.
You just ruined my pick there, Cap.
The human adventure for the win.
But, so anyway, but it's interesting. But his journey as a first officer, we see it through three seasons plus one Well, no, we were just through three seasons, right. You know, essentially. He's playing the same dramatic role as he did, essentially, in the motion picture as he was in the TV series. But,
right.
For me, I just... Okay, let me ask you this, though, because one of the big conflicts that we always see popping up throughout the series is that we have a lot of under officers or junior officers questioning Spock, or they don't have full confidence in him. What is it? What was the first appearance of the Romulans?
Balance of Terror.
Balance of Terror. Yeah. That was a big deal there with that officer at the helm who just was absolutely disgusted with Spock because of... Well, he had an ancient ancestor who fought in the Earth-Romulan War, yes. So you can't trust Spock. Yeah. Anyway, but, you know, and that seemed to be a thread where a lot of the junior officers were questioning this guy, and I don't think Spock put them at ease. And I think that there's this emotional detachment to Spock that you mentioned. Look, there's no emotional detachment that you have with, say, a Riker or a Kira, you mm-hmm. know, and so I think that is important with leadership quality. Kim, that director of yours... was the good one more emotionally available
yes.
than the laissez-faire
definitely guy? Yeah.
So and I think that's a good leadership quality, like showing that you care. Spock by definition doesn't want to care.
That's
you know
true.
Like not to say that he's not invested in his job, but those feelings of caring, I don't know. Well, that's a debate, because like he does care though
a lot yeah. about Jim.
Yeah, he yeah. does. So, but
if you're the captain, you want Spock.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. You know,
yeah, okay, it's a tough call for sure, especially yeah. when you get to the upper rankings here.
Well, Spock was my number three. We already discussed Kira; she was my number two. So we've got me out of the way. Carmen, I'm going to go to you. Who's your number two?
Number two is Spock.
Is it okay? Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you know he and Bones have always played. The two parts of like the mind and the emotion of Kirk effectively.
Right.
Like, and so I think they, you know, he had a very important role to play throughout the original series, and in mostly Wrath of Khan, he kind of mellows out a little when he's a captain and he's, you know, I guess the second in command to Admiral Kirk.
Do you think it's him being around all those kids at Starfleet Academy?
Oh, because, I guarantee it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could tell he's got that kind of affection for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he spends, you know, Search for Spock and hardly in it at all. And Voyage Home, he's kind of spaced out. He's kind of still returning to being Spock.
Yeah.
So there's not really much to say about him in those two movies.
Well,
I think
you're getting at is you think he's at his best in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Oh, he's, yeah, that's prime Spock.
Yeah, that is. Literally and figuratively.
Literally, yeah.
Cam, I'm guessing you're not piping in too much. You said a lot of Spock stuff that you may have something else to say. Why don't I jump over to your number two right now?
My number two is Riker.
Okay.
On screen. The hunt begins, number one.
We're ready. Just remember, Enterprise, Captain Riker's never lost.
For me, it's just tough. It's this... They are both, especially Riker, is written to be basically a perfect character in the same way that Picard is written to be the perfect captain.
Yeah.
That's just something that's very TNG. It's like these characters are unassailable in their abilities, really. And so what am I ranking on? Ultimately, when I get to the top, I'm looking at, if I'm a captain, which one would I prefer as my second? I don't think Riker would... look, I'm ranking Riker second, so obviously he's far up the totem pole.
Yeah.
But... To me, there's something about Riker that just... There's a little bit of an insincerity to Riker. And I don't know of another way to put it. He's great at his job. He's great at the diplomatic aspects. I love that I can send him on missions to potentially die on my behalf.
Yeah.
Because I don't really want to go down there and fight Armus.
Tar and Yar. Yeah.
But there is something a little bit smarmy about Riker that I just can't quite... I guess emotionally connect to that the way I can, even about ones ranked lower than him, like Kira or T'Pol.
Okay, it's interesting. Like, there's a certain aloofness to Riker.
Yeah.
That I think you're keen in on. And
I do think he would be a good leader, though. Like, if I'm serving under him, like, I would trust having, you know, Riker at the helm.
I don't disagree with that. Like, I think he's a much better leader, like natural leader, than say a Worf. For example,
Oh, 100%.
Slightly. Yeah. But to me, so much of his inner conflict was about, you know, should I stay on the Enterprise or should I take my own command? And, you know, you want this character that you love to, you want to see him week to week. But in my head, I always kept thinking, like, Riker, you should be a captain by now. Like, right. You know, mm-hmm. you're holding yourself back. Like, you've already proven yourself as an exceptional first officer. I think Best of Both Worlds Part 1, probably my favorite Riker episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's him wrestling with that inner turmoil about whether to leave the Enterprise or what was it, the USS Ares, or is that a different ship he was offered? I'm blanking. But anyway, it's not the ship. I know I'm getting it wrong. but anyway, it's and another great Riker as a first officer episode, I think. It's an interesting one, but Chain of Command, where he's dealing with Jellicoe. And that doesn't, that's more of a knock against him because he doesn't want to play by Jellicoe's rules, you know, which I think is kind of crummy.
Right.
But then again, it's like Riker is kind of proven right a lot of the time here, which, you know, I don't know. To me, Riker's got like this emotional availability to him that I really, really dig. Like you said, Cam, you can play trombone with him in 10 forward. Look, if a guy comes up, like a junior officer comes up and says, hey, can I get you a synthol? You know, Riker's going to say, sure.
Right.
Unless you make small talk about how your grandfather's from Canada. I hear you're from Canada too, Riker.
Right.
Alaska, actually.
Well, it is funny that, you know, a lot of these first officers are so heavily influenced in the creation based on who the captain is and the personality of the captain. And Picard is such a, you know, superhuman intellect and philosophical, you know, specialist that Riker is always going to be a little less dynamic.
He's the man of action.
He is. He's the man of action, but he's kind of a just less dynamic personality-wise than Picard. He's not as strongly defined as Picard. And so maybe that's part of the reason I feel less attached to him. And it also kind of explains why when they get to the movies, they can underwrite him as much as they want, and it doesn't hugely impact it. Whereas imagine if you got to, you know, the original series movies and they just gave Spock nothing to do, or, you know, it gave Kira nothing to do in a Deep Space Nine movie. It would be fatal to the story.
It's so strange, you know, when you watch the series, like, Jonathan Frakes is clearly the number two on the show. Like, he is, you know, the
number one, Tyler.
Well, I know. but you know, like, I know people think, you know, like, Data gets a lot of attention. That's very much true in the movies, but it's very obvious that Riker is, you know, the second most important character on that show.
Yeah.
You jump to the movies, and it's the Picard and Data show every single outing with them. And it's very curious that they do that to Riker. Look, I'm sure Jonathan Frakes was happy to direct, you know, but look, if I am serving on any of these ships and I want a first officer that I feel I can trust and I can go to and they'll have my back, I just think Riker's going to have my back in a way that Spock would not necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
I want to know that if I'm going to a pleasure planet to relax, that I'm going to have a bro who's got my back, who's, you know, tricks me into putting that little fertility statue out so I can get some action. That's all I'm saying.
What if he brings you onto the holodeck, though, and makes you watch him, like, make out with the holodeck creation, like in that Bynar episode?
Oh, with that minuet. Yeah.
You know what?
This is how it's done, Geordi. Love is blind.
It just adds to his easygoing nature.
So, Carmen, like, what was your reason for why did he ultimately take down Spock for you?
He took down Spock because I think he's just more emotionally available to the crew. Picard, like, from the get-go, like, he doesn't want Wesley on the bridge. He doesn't want kids anywhere near him. But Riker is more personable and diplomatic about it.
Oh, he gives Wesley advice about how to get ladies.
I know. Like, that's the thing is Riker's kind of always there for you. So if you're serving under him, you know he's going to be a good leader because he's not a maverick or a you know, he doesn't flaunt rules.
Like, we think of him as the bad boy, but he really is like a man of the uniform
know? He's a company man.
It's very important to him, but you wouldn't necessarily think about that. Maybe like Riker's personal life, he's a little bit on the wild side, but mm-hmm. not when it comes to the uniform, which is kind of an interesting kind of dichotomy between the character.
So yeah. he'll give me strong leadership, but he'll also, like, you know, give me relationship advice, kind of whether I want it or not.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah. I respect that.
But he'll give that smirk while he's doing it.
Yes, he will.
And let's be honest, could Spock ever pull off the Riker leg move when he goes to sit down in a chair?
No.
I don't think
no.
so.
No.
I think maybe Nana Visitor could.
Sure.
Like, I think Kira could pull it off, but I just don't know if Spock could.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I had to just rank Spock the highest because I look at it from the point of view of Kirk. There is no better first officer if you are Kirk than Spock.
Totally.
I mean, he is your perfect balance. And I think the first officer should play that role. And that, you know, Spock gives opposing views to what Kirk, you know, often irrationally decides. And Spock's right sometimes, you know, or it gives, you know, sort of a creative suggestion that then allows Kirk to come up with a different solution.
Sure, yeah.
And to me, I just feel like that relationship benefits the crew and the ship itself so much better than Riker and Picard. Like, I don't know, doesn't feel like there's that many times where Riker really changes Picard's mind.
No, but they do work in tandem really
well.
They do. If you watch those scenes where there's, like, there's a there's a conflict on the bridge, not with the crew, I mean with, you know, something else, but you can definitely see something outside. You can definitely see that, like, where Picard leaves off, Riker will pick up
on right.
in their commands.
Do you think that there's any first officers here on this list that could have been paired up with Picard and they would have really actually changed Picard's mind that frequently? Because I think Picard is such a deep thinker. He goes up and he listens to everybody and then he contemplates and thinks deeply about it and then makes his own decision.
I don't know. What kind of combo do you think it would be like, Picard and Kira?
I think Kira would drive, I think Picard would drive Kira nuts.
Well, it's almost, we saw a very similar dynamic between him and Ro.
That's true.
So, yeah, and Ro took to Picard more of a father, as a father figure as well.
Right.
I don't know if Kira would quite have that relationship. Although, if you look at her relationship with Sisko, and how she comes to accept him as the emissary. I mean, that relationship changes. I wouldn't call it a father-daughter relationship, but I don't know. Like, how would you describe the relationship between Kira and Sisko?
It helps that he is the emissary, because Kira is religious.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Sisko is kind of an outsider as well, both in kind of his attitude towards things and also kind of Starfleet's attitude towards him. Wasn't he put on Deep Space Nine for a reason?
I thought he volunteered for it, didn't he?
Okay, never mind.
Well,
I thought he was, like, you know, kind of...
He was based at Utopia Planitia, and then they reassigned him to DS9, and then he was going to put in his papers and say, look, I'm going to quit Starfleet rather than raise my child on Tarak Nor.
Yeah, because I got the impression he wasn't on, like, the fast track to being, like, leading the flagship.
No.
So I think for the both of them... They're both kind of in these uneasy leadership positions. And so I think they had, like, a neat little chemistry in that regard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also just the fact that, like, Sisko is a badass. Like, he will take the very, very aggressive stance a lot of the time. You know, gassing the Maquis. You know, and so Kira, with her background, is going to be more likely to respond to a leader like that who will occasionally do what needs to be done. Whereas someone like Picard would drive her nuts, who's just like, yak, 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 yak.
But it's interesting, though, if you look at the early seasons, like, Kira is the one who's more of the reactionary, and Sisko's like, no, let's pull it back just a bit. And you kind of see their roles sort of, there comes an X to, at a certain point on the chart, you know, but it is interesting how there's a bit of a role reversal as the series progresses. You know, Kira softens a bit, but she's still, I think, probably one of the most badass characters in all of Star Trek, even by the time the series ends as well.
For sure. So we should just count down our list for everyone at home so they're not confused as this episode ends going, wait, who ranked what? Okay. So Carmen, why don't you start ranking maybe from the bottom to the top?
Okay, so bottom of the list was Kelvin versus Spock, then Chakotay, then T'Pol, then Worf, Kira, Prime Spock, and Riker.
At the bottom of my list was New Spock, as I called him. Next up was Worf, and then followed by Crazy Chakotay, the Charisma Bomb, and then T'Pol, followed by Kira, followed by Riker, and topped off the list was Spock.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're saving the best for last. Well, number 7, Chakotay. Number 6, Kelvin vs. Spock. Number 5, T'Pol. Number 4, Worf. Number 3, Spock Prime. Number 2, Second in Command, Kira. And number 1, number 1.
Nice.
Commander Riker.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know your rankings of the first officers. I believe you can also post your own list up on Facebook. Tyler, what is that address?
Yeah, go to facebook.com/subspacepod. That's or else just type in Subspace Transmissions in the search bar there. Guys, it's a free podcast just for my own sense of self-worth. Like us on Facebook. Follow us. We're not going to like flood your feed full of stuff, but we'll be adding exclusive content there. We've been doing some cool things over the last few weeks since we launched on Facebook. So if you like the show at all, follow us and engage with us. Cam, you and I were good about responding to everybody, and it's good to have some back and forth. And yeah, we're having a lot of fun on Facebook right now, and I don't want our loyal listeners to miss out on anything.
I'm having the time of my life. I know. Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We're singing duets going, have the time of my life. Okay, Cam, go.
What are we doing next week?
We are going to be doing a review of, I think, one of the most entertaining episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Way of the Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
It's the return of Worf here on the series. So
fresh from ranking real low on all of our lists.
Yeah, can't wait to talk about this guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be fun one. That's all I can say.
Cool. You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vulcans Deserve Number One Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N. N is in number one.
You can find me at Carmen Live. That's Carmen with an I as in I'm on Team Riker.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.